Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Just a couple of browncoats with a big mic giving a shout out to all our veterans who proudly serve their country in the military. I'm your host, Rex, and I'm delivering irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite.
And this is Rex, Tex, broadcasting from Houston, Texas, high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral. And, you know, sometimes I'm Rex, sometimes Rex is Tex. That's just the way it is. but no matter who we are, the Republican Party is still in trouble, and Mitt Romney's still lost. So got some things for you on that tonight that I want to talk about. The returns are starting to come in, and some of the analysis is coming in. But let me throw it back to you, Rex, real quick to get us kicked off.
Sure. Well, where are we? We are we're now almost a week out from this debacle of an election, and it sort of more or less went out the way we saw it happening, Tex. I mean, a lot of people were shocked, a lot of people were angry, a lot of people were excited, you know, all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, any real conservative, any real patriot, any real anyone who's really involved in the political movement on the, you know, quote, right, even though we know the false, you know, the left-right paradigm is false, knew that this election was decided at the end of August in Tampa, Florida. Because as soon as Sununu and Prince Pubic and John Boehner stole the Republican nomination for Mitt Romney, they lost. I mean, that was it. That's where it happened, right?
Well, absolutely. And that's why the real defeat came in August, at the end of August, and the rest of it really has just been sort of this creeping death where you watch this, you know, false kabuki theater, and, you know, I think a bunch of people bought into it hook, line, and sinker that there was some actual contest, but Mitt Romney was never going to win this thing. And it was pretty clear to those who were watching closely that the worst possible person that we could run was Mitt Romney. He was not the most electable, which they kept saying, and we will get into that in a little bit. But so they lost, and they were shocked that they lost. They couldn't believe that they lost.
Okay.
And so, which is
they should listen to Tex and Rex.
Yeah.
We would have straightened them out.
They got sucker punched in the stomach like they did to us at the convention. Oh, yeah, it doesn't feel too good. Yeah, see, that's why it's called a party. We all got to work together. And if you fuck one part of the party, you end up getting screwed on election day. So, you know, we all watched this thing going on. I think a lot of people got emotionally invested in it, but when the loss came, Karl Rove apparently was beside himself and didn't know what to do. He had just spent $400 million to lose a campaign, and apparently his contributors to America Crossroads are quite pissed off about what happened to their money. So,
well,
hopefully
they might
Karl
be,
Rove,
but I don't know that he is.
Oh, no, he's not. He got paid really well. You know,
yeah.
And you know he's still technically an analyst, a news analyst on Fox News.
Did you say that
now?
Did you say that he's an analyst?
Yes. Well, I think some of the donors are going to make him a really hardcore analyst here pretty soon. but one of the other things that's interesting about that is Karl Rove's not a political analyst sitting up there, you know, dealing with the data, from a point of, unjudgmental, unbiased analysis. He's a participant in the political process. He owns the largest super PAC, in the Republican Party. He spent all this money to savage Gingrich and Herman Cain and Rick Santorum and all these dirty tricks behind the scenes to puff up Mitt Romney. And then people are watching Fox News and seeing Karl Rove come talk, and they're like, oh, wow, this is what's happening. This is really interesting. This is good analysis, Carl. He's a complete partisan hack trying to tell you what to do. And people are falling for it.
His super PAC is American Double Cross. Is that what it's called?
Yes, American Double Crossroads.
Double Crossroads, that's what it is, yeah. Yeah, you know, it baffles me that no one calls him out on his duplicity and his double standard. You can't be an analyst, even if you're, quote, not objective because you're on the unbalanced and unfair Fox News network, but you can't be an analyst and manage a PAC. I mean, come on as the guy who's having a PAC. That's the right thing to do. You don't come on as an analyst while you've got all these millions of dollars to manipulate people's political opinions.
Absolutely. You can't do that. It's completely absurd that they would even try. So when, of course, Megyn Kelly called him out on it, and I heard, and I have not seen the video, but I've seen quotes that she asked Karl Rove point blank, Do you actually analyze this, or do you just come up with numbers that make you feel better as a Republican? Yikes.
Wow.
You know,
that's interesting. That's a little inner – she's channeling her little inner prosecutor, because for the most part, you know, she's like most of the other blonde ditzes on Fox. She had her nether regions up Romney's you-know-what.
Yeah, well, exactly. I've always liked Megyn Kelly. I thought she was a good cross-examiner and everything. But, yeah, I mean, all of Fox News – was full on for Romney this whole time, much to the chagrin of conservatives, and which is why I quit tuning into them completely. I, as I said many times, I don't have TV, but I listen to them on Sirius Radio, and I stopped listening to them on Sirius Radio. There's no point listening to Soviet propaganda from Karl Rove.
Yeah.
But
you and 20% of their audience.
Yeah, exactly. So the interesting thing is in the aftermath of the loss, they have to come up with, you know, what the hell happened. And, of course, the numbers are starting to come in, so they can't figure out what the hell happened. So they created this Manichean struggle between the forces of good and the forces of darkness. And if Obama comes in and enacts Mitt Romney's policies, then America will be destroyed. But if Romney comes in and enacts Barack Obama's policies, all will be saved. And so then they were stuck with that narrative, and so like, well, that's it. There's not enough makers, and there's more takers in this country. You know, so now we on the right, we don't have to think anymore either. We just adopt slogans as well as a substitute for thinking. But slowly but surely, the data started to come out, and people were shocked to learn that in the most important election of our lifetime, which this had the potential to actually be, if anything, this is the most pathetic election of our lifetime. As Pat Goodell said, this is an election that America did not want to have. Nobody liked these candidates. So we had a race between who we disdained the least, and we discovered something interesting, that as of the Friday noon tally, which is the last one I was able to find online, of the popular votes for Mitt Romney, he received, this time around, 58.1 million votes, which is down from 59.9 million in 2008. So we're down 1.8 million votes. So where are those 1.8 million votes? This is the most important election of our lifetime. Who's not going to come out and vote for the GOP to save them? From themselves, right, or to save the nation. Now, interestingly, Barack Obama's support was down from 69.4 million in 2008 to 61.2 million in 2012. So he lost 13%, Barack Obama did, of his support in this election. Now, if you had told Republicans going into this, and certainly Karl Rove, that, hey, Barack Obama's going to lose 13% of his support, you would have hit the roof. You know, woohoo, we're going to win. Yeah. But you lost support among your own party, okay? Mm-hmm. So now we have what I'll call the case of the missing 2 million conservatives. Okay, so I guess this is some big damn mystery now, because Reince Priebus has demanded a full analysis. And so RNC spokesman Sean Spicer is holding roundtable discussions with Hispanics, Tea Parties, faith-based groups, youth groups, moderates, and business interests in order to get down to what happened. So you should know and take advantage of this fact that Rince Priebus's term as RNC chairman is over come January, and he is making a decision this week as to whether or not he wants to run again. So I would encourage you, and I tweeted him tonight, to go to hell and not run again, and thanks for your rhino and destroying the Republican Party. Haven't you done enough damage already? Please leave.
We have a clip.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
That was Rince Priebus.
Yes.
And that is a preview of the speech he's going to give at his nomination for chairman of the party formerly known as the Grand Old Party, now known as the Grand Defunct Party. Got Only Progressives Party.
we will have achieved some significant success when we can ensure that John Boehner is making that same quote. So where do we start with this case of the missing 2 million conservatives? Okay, so I would think a very good place to start is where we actually started when we got involved in this, and we saw what was happening with the votes that were coming in during the primaries.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. And incidentally, Tex, if I'm not mistaken, because when I got into this whole mess, as I realized that the fix was in against Newt, which, I mean, like you, at the very beginning of the primary debates, I was like, oh, cool, Gingrich is in. This is over. We're running Gingrich. We win. And then everything turned upside down. I'm like, what the hell just happened? And I got on Twitter. Newt had 1.4 million followers. Just saying. You're telling me Romney lost 1.8 million voters. Newt had 1.4 million followers. I'm not saying that's necessarily related, but, you got to – I'm just saying.
It's somewhat indicative. Okay, so this is what was going on during the primary. Now, when Newt Gingrich won South Carolina, right, he was up in every single demographic group in the Republican Party. So his support increased. They said Newt Gingrich will never get women because he's had too many divorces and women don't like that. Well, hello, I've met some women who have divorced their husbands, okay? So I don't think when a woman thinks of divorce automatically, she's like, oh my gosh, she didn't stick by his man. I think she's like, sometimes that happens. You got to get rid of those fools. You got to move on with your life. Can't, keep dealing with a situation that's not working out. So they were shocked to find out that he was up even among women. But the important thing was for South Carolina, primary vote turnout was up 150,000 votes over where it was in 2008. So there's your Republican Party surge, ready to go to the polls behind our champion who balanced the budget before, who took on Bill Clinton and forced him to balance the budget, right, against his will. Mm-hmm. Within 6 months, we had a balanced federal budget, and we maintained one for the next 4 years until John Boehner and his group of traitors stabbed him in the back and got rid of him. But what was going on all during that time? In New Hampshire, 245,000 voters turned out in 2012 compared with 241,000 4 years before. So voter turnout was down in New Hampshire. Why is that? Because they're pushing Mitt Romney and how Mitt Romney is the inevitable nominee and nobody likes Mitt Romney, but he's the most electable. You got to vote for him. People are like, I'm just not going to go and vote for this farce. So then in Florida, after all that stuff went down, 1.6 million people turned out to vote in Florida, which was down from 2 million in 2008. Mitt Romney won these states, by the way. In Nevada, 33,000 people turned out to vote in the state, which was down from 45,000 the previous time. In Colorado in 2012, 65,000 people turned out to vote. In 2008, it was 70,000 people. Virginia and Missouri, which had Missouri had 232,000 turnout, which is less than half the number who did 4 years ago. Minnesota had just more than 47,000 people turnout, which is down from 63,000 in 2008. And in Illinois, the turnout in the Chicago primary, by this point they pretty much had locked it up for Romney, was just 24%, and it was the lowest turnout for a presidential primary in 70 years.
Only 70 years?
Yeah, only 70, exactly. So I would say, in the case of the missing 2 million conservatives, here's your first bit of evidence. In the primary, people weren't showing up to vote for the guy. They did not support him or want him to be the nominee. But yet Karl Rove was on the fake news channel saying that he's inevitable, and all his little buddies were saying the same thing. Well, he's going to win, and you can't go with Gingrich. He's just too much of a wild card. You can't go with Ron Paul. He's a kook. So, you know, don't vote for those guys. You got to go for Mitt Romney. Okay, well, Mitt Romney, yeah, he won with 70% of the vote, you know, in some of these primaries, because people are like, well, shit, I guess it's him. It's this or, you know, shoot myself. And I want to vote for the winner because then I can feel like a winner. I certainly don't want to stand up for my principles and vote for the candidate that actually I think would be best for this election and who would represent me the most. Yeah, I just want to vote for who the TV people and Karl Rove told me is the winner, when Karl Rove, behind the scenes, has been assassinating the campaigns of the people that you actually support while pumping up this failed most electable candidate. So
yeah,
I think Barack Obama found him to be the most delectable. What's up?
Tex, I got a question. I mean, the numbers you just gave, the ones that particularly jumped out at me were South Carolina. Did you say 150,000 more people turned out to vote in the South Carolina primary?
Yes, 150,000 more people turned out to vote in the South Carolina primary, and Newt Gingrich won an overwhelming victory.
That's a 30% increase over McCain's win. Is that correct? I mean, okay, a 30%
increase.
High percentage. So based on that narrative, then I got to ask you, where did South Carolina find a 30% increase in their middle-aged to elderly white male population, and why didn't they vote for McCain, who's also an elderly white male? I mean,
excellent.
Ostensibly, you know what I mean? If the narrative is that the Republicans can't gain, can't manage this awesome demographic shift that's going on in these United States, and only old white dudes vote for Republican candidates. I mean, were 30% of those old white dudes missing 4 years ago? That doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. The whole narrative doesn't make any sense. And what they're starting to realize is people didn't show up to vote for Mitt Romney, and they're scrambling to figure out why. And then we go to what we're most familiar with, because this is what's has sort of been what we've been trying to do for the last several months, which is, okay, so they won the primaries, but now you have the conventions and you have to go get the delegates. Well, here's the thing. Voters are not turning up to vote for Romney. The ones who are showing up to vote are saying, well, I want to vote for the winner because that will make me a winner, even though this guy will betray everything that I stand for and my party will stab me in the back when he wins and say the conservatives don't matter. But never you mind, if he loses, they'll stab you in the back and say that you cost him the election. So it's a lose-lose both ways around. But so people went to the state conventions, and there was nobody there showing up really to be Romney delegates. People were there showing up to be Ron Paul delegates, certainly, and other people showing up to be delegates for other candidates. But it was just sort of the party loyalists that were kind of filling in the Romney thing. This should have been another sign that things were not going well. And then the convention came up, and it became clear that Mitt Romney either didn't have the delegates at all, or it was very close as to whether or not he did. So this should have been another sign. And instead of assisting or allowing there to be a vote on who the nominee was going to be, they decided that they didn't want to allow that to happen. And they just unseated all these state delegations. They screwed over the Ron Paul supporters. And it ended up costing them the election, because it actually turns out that there are four states, these states being New Hampshire, Ohio, Florida, and Virginia, where the amount of people who voted for Ron Paul in the primaries was greater than the margin of error,
mm-hmm.
or was greater than the amount of votes that Romney lost by Obama to. So New Hampshire, 57,000 people showed up to vote for Ron Paul in the primary, and Romney lost to Obama by 33,000 votes. In Florida, 117,000 people voted for Ron Paul in the primaries, and 46,000 people voted for Ron Paul in the 46,000 people voted for Obama over Romney. Okay, so the number of people voting Ron Paul is greater than that margin of defeat. In Ohio, it's 113,000, and then Romney lost by 100,000. In Virginia, it's 107,000, and Romney lost by 106,000. Okay,
well,
so
Tex, I just want to let you know that our third analyst, because on this show we're analysts. On Fox News they have analysts, but on this show we have analysts. Our third analyst, Chris, a.k.a. Trog, is with us. So welcome, Chris. Thanks for helping us out with this analysis. And as you continue with those points, I just want to say that, well, then this proves it, doesn't it? That obviously, you know, a vote for anybody but Romney is a vote for Obama, right?
Well, this let me bring up my let's get to the end of this thing here. So the number of electoral votes. Now the thing about this is, let's just talk about Florida, for instance. So 117,000 people voted for Ron Paul in the primary, and Obama defeated Romney by 46,000 votes. Okay. Now there are Newt Gingrich people, such as myself, who also didn't vote for Mitt Romney. So, you know, you can't just put this all on the Ron Paul people, but what it does say is that there was support for conservative candidates out there. And now the interesting thing is that Mitt Romney lost by 200, he had 206 electoral votes, and Obama got 303. But in New Hampshire, they have 4 electoral votes. So if they had not screwed over the Ron Paul delegates at the convention, there's 4 more, you know, delegates that you have. In Virginia, that's worth 13. So, again, if you hadn't screwed over the Ron Paul delegates and allowed them to have their votes or found ways to incorporate them, I mean, an easy thing, look, I hate Mitt Romney as a candidate, and I don't care who his vice president was, but if you put Ron Paul and made him vice president, I bet a lot of these people would have voted for that ticket, right? But they couldn't even do that. Or state that they were going to give him some job or some prominent place. They wouldn't let him speak. They only played a video. In Ohio, that's 18 electoral votes, and in Florida, it's 29. That's a total of 64 electoral votes. If you add 64 to 206, guess what you get? 270. And you know what Obama gets? 239. And he loses.
Bingo.
And Romney would have won.
Yep.
So he's not the most electable. You defeated yourself. You self-immolated yourself at that convention. And you screwed over conservatives the whole time and told them to shut up and get in line. Otherwise, the nation was going to be destroyed, everything would be ended, and there would be no hope for the future. And as a result of this defeat, now a bunch of Republicans are running around not thinking, damn, I can't believe we lost to Barack Obama. They're saying, damn, America is over. I mean, this is what Karl Rove has wrought.
Mm-hmm. That's
He's
a good plan.
He's literally the most destructive political person in America, in modern American history, I think.
That's a good plan for that's a good plan for a Democrat that infiltrated the Republican Party and converted Democrats into so-called Republicans. I mean, it's what, a 10-year plan, 15-year plan maybe, but it's very effective, and he's almost at his end game. And the weird thing is that ostensibly conservatives, people who identify as conservatives, are cheering this along, slaughtering their own convictions in order to end up with no conservative party in this country.
Well, I want to point something out. So in the aftermath of the defeat, the narrative being adopted by the party leadership is that, well, people, and Peggy Noonan said this, that the Tea Party's style of rage doesn't win. Mitt Romney wasn't running as a Tea Party candidate. He was running against the Tea Party in spite of them to prove that you don't need them, even though I've just proved that you do need them to win. In the Electoral College, we would have had a victory. And so it's not that you weren't left-wing enough. Oh, Mitt wasn't left-wing enough for me. That's not why I left the party and didn't vote for their piece-of-shit candidate. It's because he wasn't left-wing enough. I want him up there with a Shea shirt on, you know, talking about Karl Marx. And so, again, we have the same problem that we've always had. The cure for rhinos in the party is to become more rhino. This is just like the government policy of the cure for debt is more debt. And ask yourself this. This party said in 2008 that we have to run a rhino John McCain because the Republican brand has been so damaged, mostly by things that they did, like increased government spending to the ceiling, has been so damaged by George Bush that we have to run a rhino as an olive leaf. So we'll run the Democrats' favorite rhino, and therefore we can win with that. At the time, I'll be honest, I sort of bought into that strategy. I still didn't really like McCain all that much. But then we get into a situation in 2012 where they say, look, Barack Obama is so bad for the country that we cannot possibly risk running a conservative. We got to run a rhino. Everything, the cure, and then when they lose, and when the rhino inevitably loses, they say we need to be more rhino. There's no strategy in our leadership under which a rhino is not always the necessary candidate that you have to run, and when they fail, the solution is to go even further left. At this point, they have left their base behind, and they have completely discredited themselves.
This almost redefines rhino. I mean, it almost redefines rhino that if you're a Republican, then you are clearly a liberal-leaning, quote, moderate. And if you're a rhino, then you might actually be a conservative or a constitutionalist who happens to be have the party affiliation Republican. So maybe the cure for rhino is rhino, but it's not the rhino virus. It's rhino as in I'm not a, quote, neocon, neo-Karl Rove Republican. I'm a Reagan Gingrich Republican. It's phenomenal because, look, you guys know that I'm the resident tinfoil hat, card-carrying conspiracy realist of the Tex and Rex show, and when you see a series of errors that point in the same direction, it's hard to imagine that it's not deliberate. I mean, everybody's bound to make mistakes here and there. Look, Reagan did some lefty things, you know. I mean, no one is perfect. You got positions with Gingrich, positions with Ron Paul that as a conservative you'll disagree with. But, you know, they're anecdotal. But with Karl Rove, with John Sununu, with Prince Pubic, with Mitt Romney, with John McCain, with Bob Dole, with George W. Bush, with George H.W. Bush, you're seeing a series of events that seem to be errors, but that are constantly happening and pointing in the same direction. I cannot believe for a second that this is not deliberately done and this is not intentional.
Yeah,
well, absolutely,
I agree.
Rex. I agree with you 100%. And look, as Pat Goodell said, this is the election that nobody in America wanted to have. The Democrats do not like Barack Obama, and the Republicans did not like Mitt Romney. And as a result, 11 million fewer people voted in the most important election of our lifetime. You would expect that voter turnout would go way up in the most important election of our lifetime. But no, it's down. And it's down because these are pathetic candidates and because the GOP decided to become the Democrat Party and it lost its base. Now, some of the base was just like, well, you know, look, Mitt Romney wasn't my first choice. Wasn't really my second choice. But now that I have no other choice, I guess I'm going to go vote for that son of a bitch, right? And then anybody who doesn't jump off the cliff with me, I'm going to yell at them and call them names and tell them that they're destroying the country, when in reality, the person going in and voting for Mitt Romney and thus aiding and abetting the leadership and destroying the conservative foundings of the party and letting them know that you will sell out as long as there's an elephant, you're destroying it. Okay, so here's an article. So this fact is actually getting out. Now, whether it's getting to the leadership or not, I don't know, or whether the leadership cares to hear the message or not, I don't know. But this comes from Andrew McCarthy in the National Review, who talks about the voters who stayed home. And he says, the brute fact is there are many people in the country who believe it makes no difference which party wins these elections. Obama Democrats are the hard left, but Washington's Republican establishment is progressive, not conservative. This has solidified statism as a bipartisan mainstream. Republicans may want to run Leviathan. Many are actually perfectly happy in the minority, but they have no real interest in dismantling Leviathan. They are simply not about transferring power out of Washington in a material way. When was the last time you heard a Republican explain what departments and entitlements he'd slashed to pay for that? In fact, when did the GOP last explain how the country that is in a $16 trillion debt hole could afford to enlarge anything besides its loan payments? Of course, Ron Paul talked about that, and Newt Gingrich did. And so he comes to this conclusion. Truth be told, many of today's GOP does not believe Washington makes things worse. Republicans think the federal government, by confiscating, borrowing, and printing money, is the answer to every problem rather than the source of most. That is why those running the party today, when they ran Washington during the Bush years, orchestrated an expansion of government size, scope, and spending that would still boggle the mind had Obama not come along. No matter what they say in campaigns, today's Republicans are champions of massive centralized government. They just think it needs to be run smarter, as if the problem were not human nature and the nature of government, but it's just that we haven't quite gotten the org chart right yet. For Americans who don't see much daylight between the two parties, one led by a president who keeps spending money we don't have, and the other by congressional Republicans who keep writing checks and extending the credit line. Voting wasn't worth the effort. Those millions of Americans need a new choice. We all do. And so,
wow. Who was that? Where was that?
That is Andrew McCarthy writing in the National Review Online.
Wow, that's bold, and that is spot on. Excellent.
And for those of you who say that, well, but Mitt Romney would have been better because he'd bring all this business experience, you know, to it. This, do you realize how thin a thread you've completely spun an imagination in your mind to justify your vote that doesn't exist? What has Mitt Romney ever said or done to actually earn your vote? He has done nothing to earn your vote but spurn you, right? And so here's one of the reasons that you're not going to see a change, even if Mitt Romney had one, which, you know, laughably he did not. Mitt Romney's political defeats are frequent and hilarious. So this is from, I forget the name of it now. Anyway, this is called It Doesn't Matter. It's from Zero... I forget now. I apologize that I forget the source of this. But anyway, it says that here's a few things that we need to understand about federal spending. There actually are three types of federal spending. There's discretionary spending, which is basically everything you think of when you think of the government. That includes the U.S. military, the Air Force, Department of Homeland Security, you know, the parks, all that kind of stuff. So that's discretionary. Then there's
the
mandatory
stuff that Newt
spending.
Gingrich shut down. Newt Gingrich shut the government down. Oh, my God, we're going to die.
That stuff.
Yeah. Then there's mandatory spending. That includes entitlements like Medicare, Social Security, VA benefits, all that kind of stuff, which we are required by law to pay. And the final category is interest on the debt, which is completely non-negotiable because the banks are like, hey, you got that trillion you owe me, you know? And we're like, no, but if you loan us another trillion, we could pay you that trillion back with your fake trillion, and then maybe later on we could pay you a real trillion, but not really.
Restructure the debt.
Yes, restructure the debt. Okay.
Which just means we put you more in hock and you owe more, and we don't care because the principal we gave you in the first place didn't cost anything, and we're fleecing your people for interest payments on something that's valueless. Oh, fantastic. Do more of that. Please, continue.
Exactly. And guess exactly where this has led. This is why it doesn't matter if Mitt Romney came in, because first, I think we all know and accept that Mitt Romney is not a change agent, and him and Boehner being Speaker of the House, they're not going to change anything in Washington. Boehner has proven he's completely asleep at the wheel, and he's more than willing to do the bidding of whoever happens to be the president. He's already said, Mr. President, we are ready to be led. And he should have added, because I have completely failed to lead on anything. But this is where the real kicker comes in. In FY 2011, the federal government collected $2.3 trillion in taxes. So that's how much money the government actually made. Interest on the debt that year totaled $254.4 billion, and mandatory spending totaled $2 trillion. Okay? So in summary, basically, mandatory interest on the debt plus mandatory spending totaled $2.479 trillion. Okay? So you've got $2.3 trillion in tax revenue, and you have obligations that you have to pay by law of $2.479 trillion. So no matter who you get in there, you're not making enough money to balance the stinking budget. You know why? Because you're not growing the economy. And you know what that means? You could cut the entire discretionary budget of the federal government. So get rid of the military, eliminate the FBI, the EPA, the TSA, IRS, all that kind of stuff. You eliminate all that, you're still broke.
Mm-hmm.
You can cut
Fantastic plan.
That you even think of as government, and you don't have a nickel.
Wow. So Tex, if I'm not mistaken, so you said roughly $2.5 trillion is the nut, no matter what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The base.
Right now.
The base.
That's what
the
it
minimum
is. But it goes
base.
Up every year because
right.
they adjust it for inflation.
In
I work 17, for the government. They adjust my salary for inflation.
Yeah. In 1775, I believe the nut that King George III imposed on the colonies was $1.4 billion. And they
exactly.
started shooting. They started shooting.
And adjusted for today's inflation, you know what that is? That's $14 billion. That's what started the American Revolution.
Wow, that's fantastic. And this actually completely and totally underscores the point that the only person who had any kind of official federal office
brought to light, and that is that the fundamental problem that we have is this bank that they set up near 100 years ago that's collecting
mm-hmm.
interest on something of no value, because you're telling me that most of the spending is either in, quote, wealth transfers, which are ostensibly to buy votes, and interest, which is the profit for setting up the bank in the first place. It's a fundamental structural problem that isn't in the Constitution. You can just change the
Absolutely.
Player, and the problem persists.
We created the problem ourselves. As soon as that thing started, boom, bust, boom, bust, boom, bust. That's all you get. You know, Alan Greenspan, they're like, oh, they called him the maestro.
Yes.
Alan
yeah.
Greenspan, if you go look at that career, he is the maestro of creating boom and bust cycles of
mm-hmm.
ever-increasing severity.
And
until
shorter
finally,
durations.
Yes. Until finally, one showed up in 2008, the maestro lost the tune, and boom, he accidentally the entire economy.
Wow. Well, it's... I implore everybody, and this is kind of important. We've talked about this on Tex and Rex a lot. Chris has brought it up a lot. You've got to get out there, and you've got to learn how this thing works. Okay, there's a lot of information online about the Federal Reserve. A great resource if you're looking for something as a starting point is actually Ron Paul's book, End
yep.
the Fed. It's cheap now because it's been a publication for a while. You can get it. But read End the Fed, and there is a list in there of other references, a lot of Austrian economists and other books to read that are in an intermediate and more of an advanced level that you can, get into. But his book is a very simple, succinct starting point, and it is the duty. This is a duty of every single American, young, old, black, white, gay, straight, male, female, Hispanic, Latino, Martian, cross... left-handed cross-dressing lesbian, I don't care who you are. If you're an American, it is incumbent upon you and it is your duty to understand how this works. So I strongly suggest you start there. If you already got an idea and you're looking for something a little bit more advanced, a little bit thicker read, check out The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. And, in fact, I believe that he has a whole narration of it on YouTube. So you just look up G. Edward Griffin and you'll actually get the whole thing. It's there free. And listen
mm-hmm.
to it, because if you do not understand how this works, you don't understand the underlying problem, and then you're just swinging at the branches. Nevertheless, and I think Tex is bringing up some very important data, we got to understand where the tertiary problems occurred, because if we're going to fix this, one, we need to have the will of the people empower our elected representatives to end this monster, and its charter is coming up for renewal, and it's time to end it, and two, you need to know how we can move the ball back in the right direction, because we are conservatives and we are seeking to conserve a liberal document that is the U.S. Constitution. So you better read the U.S. Constitution and then let's talk about how we can move the ball back in that direction. Back to you, Tex.
Absolutely. That is one of the critical issues. I want to get into these Senate races, because the narrative being spun right now is sort of twofold. One of which is the Tea Party is the problem, and they need to be gotten rid of. Mitt
yeah.
Romney was not a Tea Party candidate. The Tea Party did not like Mitt Romney, but they felt they had no choice but to support him because he was a Republican, and now they are to blame for the fact that he was not elected. Well, they were to blame because you crapped all over them, you demonized them, and they said, I'm not participating in this. I just want no part of it, like I did. And they walked away. And what do they point to say that the Tea Party can't win?
Murdoch?
They point to the
Aiken.
Loss of Richard Murdoch and Aiken. Murdoch mm-hmm. lost 44.3% to Donnelly, 49.9%. Aiken lost 39.2% to McCaskill's 54.7%. Both of them said incredibly idiotic and moronic statements that cost themselves the election. But what they don't talk about is Scott Brown lost to Elizabeth Warren, and he was singing straight from the whole Rhino playbook with all the all hitting all the right notes. He had all the money. Linda McMahon, who, by the way, gave $10,000 to the DCCC in 2006 and $5,000 in 2007 and contributed to Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, for his Senate election, so she's a Democrat. She loses 43.2% to Murphy's 55.2%, and she's a liberal. Nobody talks about that. Moderate Tommy Thompson in Wisconsin loses 45.9% to Baldwin's 51.5%. Rick Berg loses 49.5 to 50.5 to Heidi Heitkamp, and Lingle loses in Hawaii, and George Allen loses 47 to Tim Kaine, 52.5. Nobody talks about that, but you know what's interesting about the loss, particularly of Richard Murdoch, not so much Aiken, because, you know, a lot of the reason Aiken lost was because he said something really incredibly stupid that he couldn't recover from, although Richard Murdoch ended up saying something stupid as well. But one of the things is the party leadership said that they were not going to support Richard Murdoch. After Lugar lost, they said, we will not be supporting Richard Murdoch. We're not going to be contributing any money to his campaign, and he's going to get no help from, you know, the party leadership in D.C. Okay, great. And then he loses. And then they say, you know, well, screw him. He was a conservative, and we don't like conservatives. We want to be the Rhino Party. But then they're upset with conservatives who didn't fall in line and vote for Romney. See what I'm saying? We're in an unhappy marriage here.
Well, it's
they're saying, if a conservative wins, I'm not going to support him. But when my rhinos win, you have to fall in and support him. But when we don't, they're upset.
It's almost as if Karl Rove is better at defeating Republicans than he is at making rhinos win.
Well, isn't that interesting? That seems to be a core competency of his. Convincing Democrats to join the Republican Party and then ensuring that we don't win anything and destroying actual conservative candidates. Karl Rove
has
cancer.
I wonder how much
money this guy made on the side to help destroy the party.
Oh, he's a very happy man. If money's your thing, he's quite well set. But here's the amazing thing to me, because I've said this before. Okay, when I got into this particular election cycle, I was a Gingrich guy because you know Gingrich did it. He told us what he was going to do. He gave us 10 simple points about things that everybody agreed on, and then he did those things, and he delivered. Lower taxes, he delivered balanced budgets. Granted, yes, technically, no, they weren't balanced. They were balanced by Washington, D.C. standards. But in the last 60 years, those are the only four you can point to that we actually moved towards a balanced budget in real sense. He reformed a massive entitlement program that not only cost everybody less, but actually helped those people that it was allegedly designed for in the first place more. And he cut government. And he did it despite a rhino Senate and a liberal Democrat. So that to me is when I hear people say this is what we want in a candidate, this is who we want to lead, they describe Gingrich. As soon as you tell them it's Gingrich, they go, oh no, he's too controversial. So it's just all mind management. But that's what I got into it. But I was Ron Paul before Ron Paul was cool. And I'll tell you, he's the only one that's been saying these things. And because of that, I've been getting from my Republican friends for over almost two decades now, you know, levied at me, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist like that kook Ron Paul. Excuse me, a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy realist. You tell me with all the data that you just gave us, can anybody rationally come up with an explanation as to why Karl Rove manages to lose with rhinos and defeat conservatives consistently, and yet you still tout him as not only the head of the largest super PAC, quote, for Republicans, but also as the chief analyst for political races? You tell me how that isn't a conspiracy. Anybody?
Well,
anyone?
It's not a conspiracy
because
Republican voters go along with this crap because they're too stupid to realize what in the hell is happening to them, and they have Stockholm Syndrome. They're like, well, he's our guy, you know, our asshole, right or wrong.
Yeah.
That's what
sorry, that was just brilliant. Our asshole, right or wrong. Well, you know, I mean, let's face it, that is a certain part of the body that you do have. And when you're in prison like we are, you do tend to want to protect it. But let me just point out something to bring it a little bit, because I agree with you, Dex, and I just want to grab all those, quote, conservatives who went Romney and just, you know, throttled them like, what were you thinking? You know, we had Gingrich, we had Paul, what were you thinking? But let me turn this real quick, and I know you're going somewhere with this text, so we'll go right back to you. But, Chris, I just want to ask you, because I know you've been involved in a lot of organizational structures and such. In an organization, whether it is a company, a group, an association, what have you, a party, okay, you know, I've heard of the 80-20 rule, okay, where you got 20% that do the productivity and 80% that kind of go along. And would you say that, that the Republican Party, and probably the Democrats too, but we're focusing on the Republicans, are kind of suffering from this organizational malaise where we have this 20% that have taken over? And ostensibly, they're really even smaller than that because we are kind of part of that active 20%. They just happen to have more money and tools. And they're kind of leading that other 80%, and that other 80% is just suffering from a malaise and not really thinking through what the purpose of the organization was in the first place.
Yeah, I believe that, but I also believe there's something happening, and that's the fallout. If you look at the last two or three major elections, the numbers keep falling, and Texas brought this up before too, is the Republican Party is bleeding, and it has been bleeding, and it bled like 7-8% from McCain to this election, and it could lose another 5-7%. So, you know, that 80-20 is always going to be there at the end, but I think they lost the moment people realized that their vote didn't count in the primary. That 80-20 stayed the same as a percentage, but the number dropped, and we've all said that before. And I think that's one of the things you always have to watch out for in statistics, but Romney was 4.5 million people less than Bush's second term, if you can fathom that, because they were not happy with Bush in his second term.
2004, George Bush got 62 million votes. Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney just got 58.1. You're hemorrhaging, you're killing your brand, and people are leaving in droves. And I went back to the Pew Center, the data, which I've repeated endlessly, about how Republican Party voter identification has dropped. Meanwhile, identification as an independent has risen because people are leaving the GOP to become independents. For the first time in my life, I left the GOP and I became an independent.
And Nicole,
right? And
congratulations.
How did they lose me?
Welcome, freedom.
Yeah, exactly. How did they lose me? By being too conservative or hard-ass, as Lindsey Graham seems to think? No, by being too liberal. There's 38% of us who are independents, and only 21% are self-identified Republicans. The independents, we need to get together and form our own party. Now, of course, some of that 38%, you got like Green Party wackos who are like, well, why are we not in the socialist paradise yet? But we are larger than the Republican Party itself.
Stop the weather. Turn off the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Vote a law against the weather. Why didn't Congress pass a law to make Hurricane Sandy not happen? It would be illegal for Hurricane Sandy to be here, and then it would be gone, right?
Yeah, but Jill Stein is Poseidon's daughter or something, because she can actually change the weather. She promised.
That's true.
Yeah,
I mean, look, I think that Jill Stein should employ the Bush doctrine to weather. I mean, you know, Bush said if you fight the terrorists over there, you won't have to fight them over here. Well, all these hurricanes originate in Africa, so Jill Stein should, like, launch a weather battalion to Africa so we can defeat those hurricanes in the jungles over there before they form and come attack us. I think that's a very good plan. Real quick,
hey,
Rex, quick, I think what we need to figure out is which country do we have to invade to win the war on hurricanes?
I believe it's the Cameroon or the Congo, right?
One of the, they just hit them both. They're both sea countries, you know, so like our Iraq-Iran thing.
Yeah, no one can tell the difference.
Go after them.
Yeah, no one can tell the difference. Can't pronounce them, so just pick them both out. Let's start with C.
If you, and then just put down the alphabet.
Well, but there's Chad. Well, I guess we can get 3-for-1.
Well, unless you wanted to move on to something else, I'd like to say something about the sort of Latino vote analysis that the party is trying to put forward.
I would like
somewhere else, we can always come back to it.
No, I would definitely like to get into that. I think it's pretty important. But before we do that, Chris, did you have anything to add on the points that Tex has made so far before we shift gears?
Well, I think, you know, Tex likes to go after those statistics like I do, too. You know, that 11 million number was a telltale, and I've been chasing numbers down all day until I just finally, my brain just stopped working, you know, trying to get a beat on all the different demographic votes and everything else, and I finally tripped over them. But through the process, you know, you trip over all these articles, and I don't want to read articles to you guys, but one of the things that I've seen in articles, videos, including stuff done posts, you know, by people individually, including going to Romney's site, believe it or not, never been there before. You know, I didn't want to get any on me, but I went there and I read some, there were some 60,
thousand.
Get the Romney off me. Get the Romney off me.
There was some 60,000. Well, you know, it's a poltergeist thing, but there's some 60,000 posts under his last, you know, he didn't say forgive me for being an asshole and losing. It was, you know, hey, thanks everybody for giving it. You're all, you know, one of those kind of things, right? Typical politician. Mm-hmm. But I went down through some of these posts, and there's people that have actually bought the lie that, number one, he's a Republican. Number two, that he's a conservative. Number three, that he's like us, you know, if you catch that meaning. He's not. You know, it was pretty mind-boggling. It was pretty scary. And then, of course, reading the people who know him for what he is, they have popping up every once in a while was just, you know, like those funny books that you have by the toilet. I would like to save a bunch of those and put them into a book and bind them because they were hilarious. You know,
are you
going to
put those,
you know,
is that going to be an article of binders next to your binders of women?
Yeah. But I mean, some of these people, you know, wrote, here's why you lost, you crepe. You're a dishonest, lying, blah, 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 and you have no leadership, and you're a flip-flopping fool, you know. But,
yeah.
But you know, we all know this thing. But the thing that amazes me in these articles as I've been searching for data today is this tone that they still haven't figured out what they did wrong. They ran off the youth. They ran off us, true conservatives. I'm not talking about these people who put on the fake conservative skin, you know, and call themselves conservatives, but people who actually have a core. They ran those people off, you know, who already held their nose, you know, through the second Bush and McCain. They ran off. They never did. I mean, the guy was born in Mexico or something, right? I mean, his family has these haciendas down there that are fighting the drug lords. It was a great documentary I watched on this. He couldn't even get the Hispanic vote. You know, I don't. The women don't like him. You know, white males like him. And I'm like, why? Because I'm a older, you know, 54-year-old. White male, and I can't stand the man. So I'm, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a, you know, they like his hair. I don't know, but it's pretty mind-boggling how many places they failed on, and yet I don't see anybody getting real with it, except for people like us or the article that Tex read earlier. Nobody's being honest about the crime, the coercion, the abuse, the lying, the flip-flopping.
Well, because
you know,
they have to own
it's
it.
It's okay.
They have to own it, Chris. Chris, they would have to own it because the fact is that they voted for the guy. If they talk about the crimes and the things he did, which they knew about outwardly, then you have to say, well, I gave that guy my vote. So it's an emotional defense
or
mechanism
support
to kind of insulate it. You know, gentlemen, just real quick, we're 10 minutes from the top of the hour. I'm going to open up some calls at the top of the hour, but for right now, I think we'll move on to Texas Point. I just want to put something as a kind of a filter on how we're talking about these things, and then when we get into kind of more freeform discussion in the second hour,
sure,
just keep this in mind, and that is that they told us that he was an Etch-a-Sketch candidate, and so much of this narrative and even this data that we're pulling has this filter of, you know, should Romney have been more conservative? Should he have been more moderate? Should he have been more liberal? Should he have been more this? Should he have been more that? How should he have run his campaign? And here's the fundamental problem with that. How about you be who you are? But of course, with Mitt Romney, the guy has no core, so it's irrelevant. So when the party puts these positions out there and these candidates out there with some strategy to kind of woo a segment of voters in order to win the election, but they have no principles upon which they're standing, then even if you win, what do you win? And that's the thing that we have to keep in mind, because they keep talking to us about Romney lost because he didn't sound through this, or he went too far to the Tea Party in the primaries and couldn't quite move back enough to the center in the general. Well, you know, look at Paul and look at Gingrich. They are who they are. We knew who they were in the primaries. We knew who they were before the primaries. We knew who they would be in the general election. And that's what people want. So the idea of getting people by telling them what they want to hear as opposed to standing for something is, I think, what's kind of the conversation that we're not having. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and take it to Texas analysis of demographic trends and why Mexican Mitt Romney couldn't get Latino voters.
Yeah. Now, Mitt Romney has Mexican roots. And so the story comes out that the party is too white and too old, and we don't need old white Europeans voting for this party anymore. We need to go after that Latino vote, okay? So here's a little statistic that you might be interested in. 10% of the vote this time was Latino. 71% of it went for Obama, and 27% of it went for Mitt Romney. So therein lies the problem. And so they figure, well, what we can do is if we can increase that vote somehow, then we'll win the elections in the future. And we'll do that by adopting policies based on skin color, your genitals, and the size of your paycheck. We'll imitate the Democrat Party. Because everyone knows when you go to the store, you want to buy a Sony. But sometimes you're like, hey, I could get $5 off if I buy this Sony, right? That's what they're thinking. We'll be Sony. They'll be Sony. We'll be Sony. They'll be Panasonic. We'll be Panasonic. Okay? So here's the problem. What you're doing, you may increase the percentage, but you're just getting a larger slice of an ever-shrinking pie. Because the other untold story of this is the number of Latinos who voted in 2008 was 11 million. The number of Latinos that voted in 2012 is 12.7 million. Okay, so it increased. The number of white voters in 2008 was 98.6 million. The number of white voters in 2012, 91.9 million. You lost 7 million people didn't show up because they hate these two candidates. And they hate them because you screwed them with a rhino and because Obama sucked. Well, Romney sucked too. But Obama, for all the people who surged in to vote for the first black, you know, president in history, so because I was there, I voted for him, you know, later on, they didn't want to vote for him because he sucks at his job. And they looked at Mitt Romney like, fuck that guy, you know. And it doesn't help that your own supporters are like, look, it wasn't my first choice. It wasn't my second choice. I went out to the shed. I turned on the light. I loaded the gun. You know, I stared at it. I drank some whiskey, and I decided, okay, I'll vote Romney. You know, that's not, you don't get crossover votes with that kind of narrative, but that exactly is what happened, you know. So here's the thing. They're talking about, well, we need to find some sort of way, as if it's some big mystery, some sort of way to appeal to Hispanic voters. What we need to do is amnesty or whatever. Well, you know, during the election, Newt Gingrich had an immigration plan which said if you've been here 25 years and you've got three kids and two grandkids, you've been paying taxes and obeying the law, you belong to a local church, I don't think we're going to separate you from your family, uproot you, and forcibly kick you out. Now, this plan is a bit more complicated than that, but that's a good sentence to summarize what it is. All I'm saying is at the time when Newt Gingrich was talking about this, he was roundly ridiculed by people in the press. And here's one. His name's Phil Musser. And he says, Newt, for better or worse, walked squarely into a hornet's nest, said Republican strategist Phil Musser. Okay, well, Phil Musser was Romney's political advisor in 2008. He started with TPAW in 2012, and, you know, long roundabout ways, he ends up back on the Romney team, okay? So Newt talks about this stuff, and they say, oh, that's just crazy old Newt, once again, talking about his stupid stuff. You walked into a hornet's nest with that one. Now they're like, oh, my God, you know, we really need to do something about this immigration. You know, I mean, you had a candidate that could win, and you destroyed him. And so the thing is, in this election, what they're getting out of it is that the problem isn't Mitt Romney as a candidate. There's something wrong with you as a voter. There's something wrong with me because I'm white male and of European origin. I'm the problem. Apparently, I'm too close-minded and stupid, even though, you know, I have business partners who are Muslim and they're friends of mine and Hindu, and I, you know, I'm friends with people who are Buddhist and Shinto, and I know people all over planet Earth. I mean, literally, I could go to any continent, almost any country, and, you know, there's someone there I know that I could call and I could stay with them. But apparently, I'm so, you know, ethnocentric or whatever that I'm some kind of troglodyte, even though you kind of cornered the market on that there, Trog. But, you know, I'm so retrograde that I'm the freaking problem, okay? So what could I do? Right? So that's where I was. I saw this stuff. I threw myself into the breach, okay? I didn't want to do this. I have things I need to do with my life, right? Other things, but, you know, helping
the country, leave me alone already.
Exactly. Helping save the nation is something that I felt was important. I wanted to get involved because I saw what was happening, and other people were being duped into going along because they didn't see another option, and I wanted to open their eyes and help them see what was going on, because otherwise we are going to be totally screwed, right? So I had to let my own lack of a voice be heard. So I'm in Texas, which ended up going for Mitt Romney anyway, but I didn't vote for the son of a bitch, all right? I didn't vote for the guy. And because I withdrew my votes from piling in for the Rhino, there's 2 million other people who did that with me.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've been heard. And the Republican establishment, the leadership, they have to understand exactly what they've done. Now, I talked to somebody who said, well, why would they go along with this? Wouldn't they realize that this is just causing their demise? Well, the people in political elections, it doesn't matter if their candidate wins or not. They get paid on the ride. Now,
mm-hmm.
they can make more money at the end of the ride. But guess what? They get a job either way, you know, sometimes with the same people. Because the people who didn't go into government office, they go into the private sector. And you know what? Paychecks are bigger in the private sector, particularly
mm-hmm.
at that level. And so winning is not necessarily going to pay more.
No, and a guy like Karl Rove, let's just say that this actually is the funeral of the GOP and the party dies and it's over and it never recovers and never attracts those demographic shifts. Would the Democrats hire Karl Rove? I don't see why not. He's been their biggest operative in the last 15 years, you know.
I bet he was.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. And the other thing I just want to point out real quick, because you mentioned it.
Well, Bill Clinton's an honorary Republican. Bill Clinton did more for the Republican Party than anybody else.
Exactly. He takes credit for
Republican. He sure helped Rush Limbaugh make a lot of money.
Well, yeah, he helped Rush Limbaugh, and Rush Limbaugh helped to, you know, screw us over with Mitt Romney. And then don't forget that, you know, Bill Clinton's, you know, crowning achievements, those are Gingrich's. Those are Gingrich's.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton doesn't talk about the stuff Clinton did. Bill Clinton talks about the stuff that Gingrich did and takes credit for it. So, yeah, of course. Now, you mentioned that whole thing with when Newt actually came up with a sensible, a conservative, a just, a moral and fair way of dealing with the problem that we have of past illegal immigration, looking forward to integration of those who actually ostensibly are, at least in spirit, Americans. And not rewarding them with citizenship, but actually incorporating them into our society
mm-hmm.
to some degree, and hopefully their kids will grow up and be Americans, and, you know, in 20 years everything would blow over, especially if you stop immigration. Well, when he did that, they chastised him and mistranslated ads that were played in Florida in Spanish, which, although most Americans have some familiar passing understanding of, don't quite know it well enough, but those mistranslations completely misrepresented what Newt said, and the chief culprit behind that, and this is very important for all of you to remember because this name is going to keep coming up as the future of the party. One of the chief culprits of that mistranslation and that smear against Newt was one native-born but not natural-born senator, not really Tea Party, Marco Rubio. You better remember that. You better remember that, because that son of a bitch is going to be another Bush problem, although this time a Latin Bush problem.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yet another rhino. Yet another rhino.
Yeah, and I interviewed
the guy. Serious rhinovirus.
Sorry. I interviewed the guy that ran against.
They're saying the cure for a rhinovirus is more rhinos. Go ahead, Chris.
No, that's all right. I was just saying that I interviewed the guy that was running against him, DeCastro, and that guy was a great, great man, strong constitutionalist. But the rhinos figured that young pretty boy Rubio was their future.
Yeah, DeCastro, that's one of those middle-aged white names, right?
Yeah, right. He was another Cuban. And he knew the Constitution. He can actually quote it without reading it.
And look, this whole thing about the Latino vote, we've got to go appeal to immigration to win that because this party's too old and too white. What the hell did they do to Alan West? Alan West came in. He's a Tea Party guy. John Boehner eliminated his district on purpose because he didn't like Alan West because he couldn't control him. The party doesn't give a shit if it's white or brown or anything. All it cares about is conservatives have to be gotten rid of, no matter their ethnicity or anything about them or their gender. If they're conservatives, ask Sarah Palin, you know, how being a woman is helping. You know, oh, we're too white, we're too male, we're too old, right? Sarah Palin comes along and like, get the hell out of here, you conservative. Alan West is like, hey, man, I support the Republican Party. I don't want this socialist thing. Get the hell out of here, you freaking conservative. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it nothing but old white men in this party?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
look what they did to Ron Paul's constituency.
Yeah, he brings out of here, kids, you brats.
Well, and mixed ethnicity too. Just look at some of his rallies.
Well,
you know?
The interesting thing that you bring—that's great that you bring that up, Chris. Because here's the thing, and this is pretty important because you know everybody always goes with the you know our diversity is our strength.
America is a nation of immigrants, okay, which is true, you know. Even if you have this warped view that somehow the 1 million people that lived in North America before Jamestown and Plymouth, you know, they were also immigrants. They just happened to walk here across the Bering Strait, okay? So this was a relatively uninhabited land when the rest of the world was developing. But in any event, we're all immigrants, so immigration is good because we pull the best talent from all over the world, and that's what's made us as great as we are. And that's a very good thing to do. It's truly difficult to take people out of their fatherland. It is difficult to get them to leave country for something else. And America was able to do that because we offered something that wasn't available anywhere else in the world, and that was the ability to aspire to be who you yep. are meant to be, to flourish. And people came here in yep. droves for that, and we need to keep doing that. However, when almost a quarter, 22.8% of your working age population does not have a job, you don't invite guests to come make residence in your country until the people that are already here are employed. That's just suicidal. Okay,
yeah,
that's like basically
insanity.
Saying, hey, we love you so much that we're going to screw you out of a job, we're going to keep you screwed out of a job, and then we're going to invite other people to take that job from you. And those people who are out of a job include skilled people who happen to possibly be middle-aged white males, but overwhelmingly, it is the lower-skilled jobs, which are just as important, which is the youth, which is blacks, which is Latinos. Okay, so those are the people who you are inviting others to come take the jobs away from them before you hire them, and that is just national suicide. And there was one candidate who actually talked
yep.
about that, okay, and that was Virgil Goode of the Constitution Party. He brought that up, and that's a very valid point. Now, he never said we need to stop immigration. He simply said we need to close the southern border so we don't have illegal immigration. We need to increase legal immigration eventually, but not before our unemployment rate drops to below 5%. That's a very sensible and conservative principle. It is not xenophobic. It is not racist. It is just sensible, because guess who would get most of those jobs if we actually reduced employment to 5%? It would be inner-city jobs like in Detroit and Buffalo, where your unemployment amongst the black population, especially youth, is over 50%. Okay, so these are the people who need to have jobs so that they can have dignity and have some money in their pocket and contribute to society. And until you get them involved, talking about who's voting for whom is irrelevant, because people don't give a crap who they're voting for if they're trying to figure out how they're going to feed themselves next month. And that's just dumb. And I know that we have somebody who likes to talk about Virgil Goode, and this is not a Constitution Party show, but we have the national vice chair of the Constitution Party online with us. Randy, your mic is live.
Do I need to say good evening?
Are you calling from Mars?
Randy.
Like a cyborg again?
Yeah.
Yes.
Seriously,
You need an R. You need to get your R2 unit to be cyborg you.
Oh, yeah.
Please say Sarah. Say Sarah Connor. Sarah Connor.
Is it sounding any better?
Not really.
Slightly better. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Now you sound like you're in a submarine.
Now, okay.
Yeah, but we can't hear you now. The volume is so low.
I'll call back later.
Call back.
There was just one thing I wanted to add about Scott Brown. You know, it's real interesting that this very state that he got elected in, that he was elected as a Republican, but guess what? Out of the state, there's only about 12% of it that is Republican. So that means there is 88% Democrats. So even if you tripled the number of Republicans there, the Republicans could never have elected Scott Brown. So when they were out there tramping, you know, hey, it's a Republican victory, you know, that's not – you couldn't have created a victory if you wanted to. It was the Democrats who elected Scott Brown. They wanted to say it was a Tea Party victory, Come on, folks. It was a Democrat victory because look at what he represents. So, you know, when people try to throw out these you know, victories and all that, take a look at the reality here. And just one other thing real quickly, you all talked, especially you, Rex, talked about G. Edward Griffin. It just so happens that G. Edward Griffin was the very first interview that I ever did when I first started my broadcasting. And I've actually got three episodes of the interview that I did with G. Edward Griffin. And it was a very, like I said, it was a year ago, just a year and a couple of weeks ago, that I actually interviewed G. Edward Griffin. It was a great interview. So. But I'm gonna. I'll call back in on the other.
No, you sound fine. Randy, you sound fine now. Stay on.
Oh, I do sound.
Yeah, you sound fine now.
Oh, I wonder what that was all about. Maybe it was my tinfoil hat that was interfering with the electronics.
That's right. You gotta take those off when you broadcast.
Maybe I need to. Well, and I also have it lead lined too, so maybe that had something to do with it. But no, you guys are exactly right. And you know what? The thing of it is that people have to understand and start taking a look at what this two-party duopoly is doing to these United States of America. And, you know, if they would just start taking a look at the truth, you know, we could get so much farther on down the road. But I got to tell you, there's some very perplexing things that have happened in this last election. I've mentioned a couple of them, but I got to tell you, you know, as I'm seeing more numbers come in, and I'm telling you, I don't know, I cannot say it was absolutely based on fraud, but with the absolute voter dissatisfaction that was expressed, you know, especially after the presidential debates, you know, with 47% of the people saying, you know, neither, and then 52% of the vote saying neither, and with and like I said, I attended that third party rally, and never before in the history of the United States did we have so many people, and I think this includes the Abraham Lincoln election too, that we actually had this many people be there with that interest, international interest, national interest in a third party debate. And for someone like Cynthia Davis, who was a four-time elected state representative, has name recognition, voted the most constitutional legislator in the state of Missouri with Federation for Right to Life endorsement and several other endorsements, only getting 2% of the vote. That just does not stack up to everything that I know and understand about what was going on. So, you know, there's some funky things going on here, gentlemen. You know, I don't know.
I'm sure they control those machines. They cannot afford third party to get any real numbers. You know, it's amazing to me when I look at, you know, all the news and articles trying to follow, you know, the different tones of pathways of what people are discussing. And one of them is every once in a while somebody posts something about, oh, you know, there was fraud and there was this numbers and 135% registered and blah, blah, blah. But I keep saying, but Romney conceded faster than I've seen anybody concede in the last 20 years. And, you know, without any question, just conceded. And I believe it's because they don't want anybody to investigate any fraud because they had it on both sides. And Obama in his Chicago fraudery just managed to outmaneuver Romney and his Massachusetts fraudery, and they just want it to all go away, and the people who control both of them don't really care because they're both the same.
I have heard directly from people who are using the system that the ORCA system that the Romney campaign and the Republicans created in order to locate must-get votes, you know, people have to come out to vote type thing.
Oh, yeah.
They said that in addition to the system being completely screwed up, they said the data was total shit. None of the information was useful or in a usable form. So you can build this great, you know, system, but that system is a throughput to content, which is data. And the system failed because it's poorly designed, and then the data was shit.
Yeah.
So Orca was a big flop. Actually, much like the original movie called Orca, I think it was a big flop. So. For those of you who don't remember, it's a movie in the late 70s. I think it was a Jaws ripoff or something called Orca.
Yeah, killer whale. Well, I think
Romney was a... Go ahead.
No, here's something I think that's important, and I say this over and over again, and you guys probably think I'm repeating myself, getting old, whatever. But I think what we have to be careful of, I think what's tainted and has really hurt the conservative movement is the term conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think taking that constitutional terminology, that liberty, that Ron Paul, you know, libertarian, liberty movement, constitution, and get the hell away from that conservative term, because it's everything everybody has learned to despise since George Bush.
If you say I'm a conservative, it's the scarecrow thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I really believe that.
It's, mm-hmm. And it gets back to the false left-right paradigm. All it says mm-hmm. is I'm on the right, so I'm a conservative. I'm on the mm-hmm. left, so I'm a liberal. Or now I'm a progressive. They changed their branding. But it didn't change the policies. And the thing is, it's about centralized power versus decentralized power. I've said it over and over again. But mm-hmm. look, on the Democrat side, they have people who support decentralized power, right? Look at Howard Dean, you know, his campaign. Mm-hmm. And they shut that guy down, right?
Yep.
Because he was talking about, hey, we need to go after the vote of the guys who have the, you know, Confederate flag on the back of their trucks or whatever. And, of course, oh, my God, that's inflammatory. But what he's trying to say is we need to go after ordinary voters in the South, right, who, you know, are not, you know, doing economically all that well. We need to get into this vote, sort of the lower middle class vote. We need to connect with them somehow. And if we do that, we could actually win. And what the leadership of the party, the limousine liberals, said, and well, I'll tell you a little bit about that in a second, but what they said was, screw you, and you can't be the person who's leading our party. And they shut him down with John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
John Kerry, who is very much like Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
They come from the same state, and guess what? Lost, too. Nobody likes these Massachusetts politicians. What is going on with Boston? Where are they getting these piece-of-shit candidates from? I mean,
well,
it's like they just crank them out. That's their main export product, is piece-of-shit presidential candidate.
Well, Tex, that's
a byproduct.
Do they
all go to the same hair place?
Yeah, they do. With John Edwards. But it's a byproduct of a large project that people outside of Boston may not be familiar with, but everybody in Boston knows it, called the Big Dig. It's been going on for decades, and they're basically like redoing their downtown transit system. And I believe they tapped into an unknown pipeline of this weird radioactive material that just seeped into the upper echelons of society, and they've imbibed on it, and they turn out the most banal drones who are just wealthy, out of touch. They have that hair, that presidential look, but they absolutely have no concept of who Americans are. And, you know, the thing about who do you go after to win elections, well, if you want to go after voters, you want to attract them, and the voters are middle class, lower middle class, poor, you know, the bulk of America, then the best thing that you can do is restructure the system so that you can leave them the hell alone, and they'll vote for you. But when you come in with your pandering, I'm going to give you this, and I'm going to do this for you, and I'm going to do that for you, and then you don't deliver, they tend to get a little pissed off, and they stop voting for you. It's pretty straightforward. Gentlemen, we have another caller on the line, and I believe it might quite possibly be of the demographic segment that Mitt Romney lost. 954, your mic is open. Who are you, and what's on your mind?
It's me, and I'm not going to
Hi,
say
Harriet.
Anything right now. Hi, everybody. Listening to your marvelous, listening to your marvelous program and writing away here.
Thanks very much, Harriet. Harriet. I've been reading your comments. So.
Well, at least that. Yeah, if I'm wrong, I'll understand.
Well, Harriet, we're all wrong sometimes, but the thing is that most of us are just generally right, which is why we're not voting for these losers, and we appreciate
That's
you
right.
listening and calling in. And I just want to point out something to everybody. As we're talking about all these demographic shifts about women, about age, about national origin, ethnicity, religion, you know, it's easy to get bogged down in these details and the you know, as running a campaign, it might be important to look at those things. However, the real fact is that we're all Americans. And what we're looking for is a politician who represents American principles. So when we're talking about labels, Chris, you're saying, you know, conservative, liberal, and those are really stupid labels to begin with because nobody knows what the hell they mean anymore, which is intentional. But we're all Americans. And Americans, for the most part, believe in rugged individualism and taking personal responsibility in helping somebody when they're down. And helping them doesn't mean giving them crap. It means helping them get a leg up so that they can take care of themselves. That is a unifying message. And it doesn't matter if you're a 76-year-old woman, a 15-year-old Latino, a 36-year-old middle-class black guy. It doesn't matter, because that message resonates with everybody. And that's what we have to get back to.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we're heading for a third party candidate in this next election if we have a country left.
Well, okay, Harry, we will always have a country countries.
Guaranteed.
I mean, because in reality, we really have 50 countries, essentially 50 sovereign countries that are confederated together in union. I think sometimes, and we all tend to do this, it's part of our conditioning, we tend to conflate country, America, the country, with the federal government. Well, those aren't one and the same. Remember, America existed before the federal government, and should this federal government invalidate itself, America will still exist. We're Americans. We'll always be Americans. We're talking about fixing our government. Our country's not broken. Our government's busted.
Well,
exactly. Our government doesn't serve our interests. They're a cabal. They've joined together. They have exactly the same goals, which is to increase state power.
Same here.
Whenever any political movement comes along and it wants to devolve power back to the people, unless it's in the service somehow of increasing the central power, then it has to be gotten rid of. And if a candidate comes up and starts talking about things like auditing the Fed or balancing the federal government's budget, it has to go. That is the repeating pattern. And the solution on the Republican side is always run a rhino, run someone who's run a Democrat, run a progressive Democrat. A rhino is a progressive Democrat, let's just be honest. And that's the solution that our party has. And so either we will force our party to see the error that they have made by, just looking at the election returns and pointing to the data, or the Republican Party is lost. Because no one's going to go vote for this party if this is what it stands for.
I don't even think we have a Democrat or Republican Party anymore. I don't look at it as such, because their way of getting reelected is by fraud. Unless we get down to the cause of the fraud in the elections, are we going to move ahead? Because we are allowing people to come into our system, run our country, unqualified, blah blah blah, and we're not doing anything about it. Oh, we talk about it, we complain about it, we write about it, blah 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 blah. But yet they're in office by fraud. And
we're not
doing anything about it.
Harriet, you're absolutely right.
Our countries are taking their wares overseas because they refuse to pay the mandates and the taxes, which I don't blame them, but they're leaving poor people who have skills, and if the companies are not here, there will be no jobs, and this is what the government wants.
Harriet, you're absolutely right. Now,
deals with foreign governments.
Now are going to grow government because we have to take care of these people. And the only ones that can afford to take care of these people with housing and food and money and da-da-da is big government. So we're in a mess. We're just in a mess. And the root cause of the whole issues that we're facing now, in my humble unexpert opinion here, is that if we don't get down to protecting our elections and electing the people who we want and putting our foot down and showing that we're strong, because Russia's already said, hey, you're weak, we're freer than you are.
Well, Harriet, you're absolutely right. You bring up a very, very valid point. And Harriet, the issue is, and this is, and our founding fathers were aware of this. Okay, first of all, your unexpert opinion, as you put it, is the only opinion that matters. You're an American voter. Okay, this is your power. This is your country. But our founding fathers were aware of this, which is precisely why they set up the system of dual sovereignty, and precisely why election rules are handled by your state, in your case, Florida. and what you are supposed to do and what you are supposed to get other people to do in the various groups you're in, associations and tea parties, is change the rules of ballot access and how we vote. And we need to go back to paper ballots, to pen and paper, to write-ins, and then your voice will be heard. So when we say, you know, all we're doing is talking and not doing anything, we are the ones who have to do something. But it isn't about taking on the federal monster, because alone, even banded together, it is a big mess. However, in your state, you can reduce the power of that federal monster by taking care of things in your community, banding together with other people in neighboring communities, and going to your state house and having them adjust the way the voting is done so that you have more power. And we saw it, and Tex actually brought those numbers up earlier, where he talked about four states had they gone for Romney, and those are the ones where Ron Paul had a larger margin in the primaries.
Right.
Okay, that electoral college system was set up precisely to keep that power in your hands, because if it is a national election, you lose everything. You become one of 315 million. But in Florida, you represent one of your entire population, and you can organize better, and you represent those, I believe it's 29 electoral votes, and that's how it's done. So you have the power, you just... we've been taught not to use it, and I
right.
think that that's a key point. And I want to actually throw it to Tex and then to Chris, and then I've got a caller from area code 618 I'd like to bring in. So, Tex, go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank
you. I would just say that, you know, you can't get better until you realize there's a problem. And right now the leadership is bewildered. They just got sucker punched, and they were sucker punched by people like me. So I'm happy about that. Screw you. I'm so happy Mitt Romney lost. I can't even tell you. I hated that guy, okay?
Yeah.
Because, look, economically, it would be better if Mitt Romney won, okay? But here's the problem. If he won, they would use that to discount conservatives and say that they don't need to be conservatives and that this shows that they need to be more rhino. But by defeating them, politically, it's better. However, they're already trying to spin it to say that, oh, we lost because we need to be more rhino. Well, they have reached the tipping point. They have ripped the fabric of the party in half. They have gone so far to the left that they have lost the base of the party. And they think that eventually, somehow, they're going to, you know, steal the Democrats' votes, and they're going to become the Democrat Party. This is a failed strategy. So right now, the leadership is, you know, basically KO'd, and they're in the boxing ring, and they're spinning around and wavering. They don't know what's happening, and it's time to go let them know that the reason you didn't, that Mitt Romney didn't win and that you didn't like him and that voter turnout was down in the primaries is that you don't want to see more rhino candidates, that this party has gone too far to the left. It does not represent me. I want to see a conservative party that actually stands up for the principles that it says that it stands for. I need to see Reince Priebus go. I never want to see Mitt Romney's face ever again around this party, and John Boehner cannot be Speaker of the House. Now, if you do those things, you will have sent a very powerful message, and we will have gotten this party back. And then it's time to flood into its ranks and take the thing over on a state-by-state level.
Yep, person-by-person, state-by-state, to you, Trog.
Well, you know, I understand exactly what Tex is saying, and I know that logically it makes sense that is the change, the mindset and the change that needs to be done. The challenge I see is I don't hear any humility. I don't hear any step one of Alcoholics Anonymous admitting that you are powerless and you have a problem. You know, that admission, what I see is resistance to any truth at all. You know, they're blaming the Ron Paul people. They're blaming the Tea Party. They're blaming
the
conservatives. Yeah, they're going absolutely the wrong direction. They're thinking, well, we didn't double down hard enough on the moderate game. And I'm like going, no. You know, they know nothing about what the common person. I can tell you why Mitt didn't poll women, Latinos, Hispanics, the Jewish vote, any of the demographics, the minority demographics. Nobody trusts him. That's why.
One second. I saw an article. They were talking about a poll. So they do all these stupid polls, right? They pay people millions of dollars for this shit, right? And, like, it's complicated. You could actually just have a conversation with people, which I guess is what the pollsters are trying to do, but it's such an artificial environment that it's a fake poll. And they said, well, people voted for Obama because he cares about them. And so the problem was Romney doesn't care about them. So now we have to have a Republican candidate that cares about their problems. Well, here's the problem with that. What in the hell does that even mean? Okay? oh, now I have a Republican that cares about my problems. That is such, you know, an undefined term, gray area, gray matter. It means completely different things to different people. And yet,
these people got paid millions
of dollars to come up with this genius revelation.
Yeah.
Okay, why did Mitt Romney not care about you? Well, he didn't care about the damn delegates. Let's just start there.
Yep. Look, Tex, Romney's just crouching in your pee patch, and he's not really one of you. I mean, it's just really that simple. And it's time to take his silo down.
My tractor's rumbling by, man. My tractor's rumbling by, and I'm going to hose down the barn door. Cause, you know,
well, and he wears grandma jeans,
I'm done
too,
with
so. He wears in grandma jeans, so how in the hell can you care about me, man? We actually wear normal jeans.
Well, he was trying to attract, female population above the age of 50, but he clearly failed in that regard. And when a guy like Obama...
By wearing their pants?
He's just so terrible. The only person that could lose the vote is Romney. And we've got another caller, gentlemen. Area code 618. Your line is open. Who are you? What's on your mind regarding the election demographics? 618.
You know me. I never have an opinion on anything, guys.
Ah, it's you. Okay, I thought I lost you when you came back.
It's a cyborg listener.
This is what look. He is a cyborg.
A
he's like the Terminator. He never.
No,
stops.
It's that marine. It's that marine stealth crap.
That's right. You know, you never know which number I'm going to be calling on. So just beware.
FOF, baby.
Well, you know, the one thing that really summed it up for me, and I think this is really the one of the what do I want to call? Is it the coup de grace? I don't know, but. You know, when Romney in his concession speech says, and we need to pray for Obama's success. Okay, he's talking, you know, throughout everything, he's talking about how Romney or how Obama needs to be taken down on this and how he needs, you know, and then all of a sudden now he wants to pray for his success. Well, he didn't say pray for America's success. He said pray for Obama's success. And if Obama is successful in everything he wants to do, this country is doomed. So, you know, I think that tells a pretty big story right there.
Yeah,
exactly.
Can't disagree.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Rush Limbaugh sort of infamously or famously, depending upon your opinion, said when Obama got elected that I hope he fails, you know. So you don't want the establishment to succeed in what they're trying to do, because what they're trying to do is basically destroy you in order to increase their own political power. And that's really a problem.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. But other than that, I'm just, you know, I'm listening to you guys, and you're doing a great job. And, you know, the one thing that I would like to start seeing, you know, I mean, we can complain till we're blue in the face, but until we start taking steps to correct this, we're going to get the, as Robert has said many times, if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to keep getting the same old thing. And we've got to really start laying down the strategy about what we got to do next. And that's what we're planning on doing, and, you know, start laying the groundwork. And I appreciated the call. I don't remember who it was. You know, I was talking about, you know, we need a bunch of people to step up to the role of being a candidate. If we're going to be successful in third parties, we're going to have candidates for these third parties. But, you know, as the one caller mentioned the other night, hey, not all of us fill up to the role of being a candidate. We feel like being up in the role of support. Okay, absolutely agree with that in terms of, you know, you feel, you know, there's a role for you to play here, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the candidate. But I got to tell you, when I ran for governor in 2006, it wasn't because I had this overwhelming sense of, I got to be the next governor of Illinois, I'm the best thing since sliced bread. No, I'll tell you the one thing that drove me, it was, if not me, then who? And as the chairman of the Constitution Party, I was seriously trying to fill in the who, because I never felt qualified. I'd never done anything like this before. But guess what? If not me, then who? And since I couldn't fill in the who, guess what? It became me. So, you know, as you start to, you know, as you and your listeners start thinking about this and you start asking that question, if not me, then who? Well, if you can find the who, support them. Hallelujah. Great to go, good to go. But if you can't, guess what? One or two things. Either you're it, or you find somebody to be it and support them. because if we don't start doing this and taking our country back, then we've got nobody else to blame but ourselves. And by God, I'm not going to be blaming me, because I'm going to do the best I can to either run or find somebody to run. Actually, I'm going to do both. That's the honest opinion. I'm going to run. I'm going to find other people to run. I've got to find people to support me and people to support other people. So, you know, that's the strategy here as I understand it. Let's take this system over, and the only way we can do that is to get we the people elected there, and it's not going to be through the two-party duopoly.
Well, correct, there's 11 million people who chose to set out this election, and half the country doesn't vote anyway to begin, or whatever that number is, depending on that, you know, whether it's midterm or, you know, we've talked about these numbers before. But there's 11 million people that are disgusted. There's a database of people right there, you know, that are legitimate numbers of people who voted the last major election. So, you know, where are they going? Nowhere? You know, a couple million of them voted third party. There's a big chunk of them that
too many people watch television and they get defeated. They get defeated by the message that's on television, right? You don't need to get your information from there. You can get your information from other sources. Television can be a supplement to your information, but there's no substitute for doing the research on your own. And so whether you're on the right or you're on the left, do your own research. Figure out who actually represents what you represent. If you think Jill Stein has, you know, got the next thing since sliced bread, start voting for that. You don't have to vote for someone because they're the Democrat. Start voting for the person who is actually expressing what you believe. You know, you can change policies based on the size of support that the third parties are getting. They do this all the time in Europe, and the only time really as an American that you get to express your opinion is in the primary, because it's the only time you can actually vote for who you want. You have the greatest diversity of candidates there. At that time, don't let television tell you who the winner is. Do the research and find out who represents what you actually believe, and then go vote for that. That's what's most important.
Here's an interesting number, though. There's a guy that just did some numbers, took a look at the numbers in Missouri, and one of the things that he found is that out of the total number of voters, 78,000 of them only voted in the presidential race. They didn't vote in any of the down ballot candidates at all. 78,000. Now, that's an interesting statistic that we could take a look at and diagnose a little bit. But, you know, we know that out of that, whatever the percentage is, there's at least a percentage of people, when properly motivated, will at least come out and vote for somebody. Now, you know, there's another part of the population that doesn't come out to vote at all, as Chris is talking about. But here's an electorate that at least came out to vote for somebody. And, you know, of course, all the media hype was all about the presidential race and, of course, all the fear-mongering that's associated with that. But we need to connect with these people and say, look, there are some other important areas to vote for. You know, I mean, if that's part of that 78,000 had voted for Cynthia Davis, she might well have done pretty well in that election.
Absolutely. And look, you know, one of the things that we mentioned is that this election year, there were 11 million fewer people who voted because they hated the two candidates. Because, let's face it, Mitt Romney is a piece of shit candidate, and Barack Obama is a piece of shit candidate. Nobody liked these guys, and they didn't want to vote for them. But they were jammed down our throat by the establishment, by the banksters, right? The thing is, withdrawing your vote is not good enough. You have to do something different. As I said, let your own lack of a voice be heard. Go vote for somebody who actually believes what you believe. How many people voted in this election? 120 million people voted in this election. That's less than 30% of the population of the country. If you could get other people to start participating and start voting for who actually believes what you believe, and quit tuning into television and pretending that there are only two parties and that you're throwing your vote away if you don't vote for them, you could actually change this country. Because let me tell you, for all of those who are Republicans who told me, oh, I'm throwing my vote away if I don't vote for Mitt Romney, right? You threw your vote away because you voted for Mitt Romney and he didn't win, by the exact same logic. And you know what? The person who stayed home, did he vote for both Obama and Romney? You know, since I didn't vote for Mitt Romney, does that mean I voted for Obama? Since I didn't vote for Romney, does that mean I voted for Obama? No. My vote was for the person that I voted for. This whole logic game is a complete fabrication. And
well,
American people need to realize that we're in the control of this whole thing, and you need to make sure that your voice is heard. And by not participating, that's actually not acceptable. And the other thing is, go to the conventions. There your voice is really heard. There you have an actual effect. You know, you
right.
can do something directly. That's what's very important, I think.
Tex, you're nailing it. You're right on. And here's the thing. Basically, half the people didn't vote. And I would argue that close to 70% of those who did vote didn't vote for anybody that they wanted to vote. They were ostensibly voting against the other guy because they fell for the false dichotomy that you're presented with. It's either this guy or that guy. And, you know, the simple fact is that that's not the way it works. And what you need to do, we keep talking about, well, you know, we keep complaining, but what are we going to do? You know these people who don't vote. You know them. Now, you might not know that they don't vote. Maybe you don't talk politics, but guess what? You have to do it. You've got to talk politics. Sometimes it might be uncomfortable, but, hey, you know what? You're talking about the future of the country in which you live, and whether your issue happens to be, I just want to be left alone to watch TV, or I just want to take my kids to the ball game, or I just want to be able to get a, you know, 64-ounce soda in Manhattan. Whatever it is, it's a political issue. So you've got to get involved. We all know these people who did not vote. Why didn't they vote? It's not that they don't care about the country. It's that they feel that it doesn't matter. And you need to tell them that it does matter, that they do need to get involved. And the key to doing it is having those conversations with them about what we're talking about here and taking the information. Remember, you can always follow the show by clicking follow below the show icon. You can download the MP3. You can send it to somebody in an email. Share the information with them. Let them get involved. We've got 2 years before the midterm elections, and we've got to make a resounding sound in order to set it up for 2016. And the other point is that's very important is you've got to work in your county, in your precinct, at your state level to get these ballot rules changed. You go, who am I to get these ballot rules changed? Let me tell you who you are. You're the voter. These are the rules that affect how you get to have your voice heard. You have not only the right, you have the power to make these changes. So you go to the elections board, you go to your delegate, you go to your state senator, you go to your county representatives, and you tell them, I want to be able to write in whomever I think is the best choice for each office. I want a paper and pen ballot. I want it to be counted in public view to eliminate fraud. And maybe you want to have a different kind of voting instead of just, you know, vote for not more than one of these. Maybe you want to be able to vote for a couple of them. Maybe you want a rating system. You know, there's a lot of different ways to look at this, and you can affect it on a state-by-state level depending on how your community is going to respond. Maybe you want a no-confidence vote. I mean, think about it. Those 90 million that didn't show up to vote, maybe they would have shown up to vote and say, none of the above. And then if there is a none of the above gets the majority, then guess what? You would force all parties, not just the two, but all parties, to put up better candidates because you're basically saying none of these guys represent anything that we want.
It draws the Electoral College.
Exactly.
They have to figure out. And that's what the Founding Fathers said. The Founding Fathers said that political parties are not only a bad idea, they're evil. And the Electoral College system was they did not want someone super eager to be the president to become the president. They thought that was a very bad idea because it attracts the wrong type of person. And so they said that the office should find the man, and that thus is the background behind the Electoral College. Now, whether or not it's certainly not effective these days because, you know, I was at my convention where we picked our elector, and given the fact that our state went for Romney, he is the Texas elector who's going to go do this, and he's not about to do anything, you know. It's not like he's having some sort of consideration before he goes. He's just going to drive to Austin, go to the Secretary of State's office. They're going to hand him a piece of paper he's going to write in Mitt Romney, and then he's done. But, you know, that's the concept behind the Electoral College. But if you had something like that where you could say that, look, these parties, they don't represent me. I don't like what they have to say. And so I vote no confidence, then you actually could cause confusion in the Electoral College where people have to sit down and figure out what the heck's going on. And if you actually had very competitive state conventions, you could go to these things and start who you pick as elector would start mattering, right? When I was there, it was an old guy. I was going to run for elector, but it was an old guy, and I had already seen how the whole day went. It pretty much, he was going to be shoot in, and then there was some young, enthusiastic girl who really wanted to go. I voted for her because, you know, screw that son of a bitch. But, you know, at the end of the day, 80% of the room voted for that stupid bastard who,
yep,
he also was the guy who was the MC of all the ceremonies throughout the day. And so it's very hard to compete with that, because who's this young girl? I don't know. But I think she'd do a great job, because what are you doing? Not much. And this guy's completely in the tank for Romney, so screw him. But, you know, we have these systems, and we could reactivate them any time. The only reason that they're not active now is because we've given up on them. And that's what the problem is. We have stopped participating because participation has become watch the television. The television
exactly.
will tell you what to go do. That's not what democracy is about. TV is one of the worst inventions in the history of mankind. It has turned you into a complete drone. Stop paying attention to what they say. Karl Rove
Correct.
Basically crapped his pants on Fox News, you know, while we were all watching. And you know what? Collectively, a lot of people did too, because they thought the guy was telling them the truth. We were saying early on, Mitt Romney has absolutely zero chance of ever winning this election because he doesn't stand for anything. And deep down in your heart of hearts, you knew it was freaking true, but they had managed to so demonize Barack Obama, even though their candidate was going to implement exactly the same policies, that you believed it, and you thought, oh, my God, Romney didn't win. We've lost the country. Romney
yep.
would just go in and do the same thing. That's
and
the
you
problem.
Would cheer it. And you would cheer it.
Yeah,
and Tex,
he would
you're
say,
absolutely
this is
right.
great.
Yeah. Tex, you're 100% right about non-participation and about the tendency for people to have diminished mental capacity when thinking in large groups. So remember two things. One, you're an individual, and America is based on the principle that the individual has sovereign rights, and you give some of those rights and powers to your local government and so on up the chain in order to order our lives together, but it all comes down to you at the end. And two, non-participation is not an option because your silence is consent to what's going on. So you can't complain about it if you're not doing something about it. Now, don't worry about the results because that is not in your hands, but the action is. And speaking of action, Blog Talk Radio is going to cut us off the air in about 10 minutes. So I would like to make the rounds and let everybody give their final thoughts so Tex and I can close it out. So why don't we keep it brief, 1 minute or under. So why don't we start with Harriet and then go to Randy. Harry, go ahead if you have any final thoughts.
Yeah, I just put a note out. I hope you approve of it. And anybody that would like to try a letter to encourage Newt to become speaker, again, I don't know how that could be, but it's worth a try. I'm going to research it more. Just send. Let me have their email address. I will propose a letter for approval and see if we can send them on to Newt.
Well, we appreciate that, Harriet. And, yes, it is legally possible, although unprecedented, because no Speaker of the House, I believe we've had 52 of them, has ever not been a member of the House. But it is perfectly valid that a non-member of the House can be elected Speaker. Newt Gingrich would certainly be an effective Speaker. I think it's a long shot, but it's certainly worth the effort. It would certainly make some noise. And I just want to point out to everybody, here's Harriet. Okay, Harriet, you have a background in nursing, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so here we have Harriet.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harriet who takes care of people in the healthcare industry, and she's active. She's doing something. Now, whether Harriet's letter-writing campaign succeeds in making Newt Speaker or not is not the point. The point is that she's doing something in which she believes in something to change the system, and I applaud you for that, Harriet, and yes, thank you for posting that. And if anybody wants to help Harriet with that, please do, because it is quite possible, and it would certainly be a wonderful move to eliminate that useless piece of beef jerky as Speaker and put a real man in like Newt Gingrich. Randy, why don't you go ahead and give us your final thoughts?
Thank you.
Is it okay if I put in a plug for my show, guys?
Absolutely.
Well,
in fact, I'd be
tomorrow,
very upset with you if you didn't.
Well, thank you. Tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing somebody that you all know, Kelly Mordecai. And I'll be interviewing him on Constitutionally Correct. You can go to Constitutionally Correct on Blog Talk here. And we're going to be talking about the grand jury and the pettit jury and jury nullification and some of that stuff. And it goes at 10 o'clock in the morning. So that's all I got. I just really appreciate what you guys are doing. And, you know, I appreciate the continued discussion about this because it's important and people need to understand it.
Well, thank you, Randy. And everybody, please check out Randy's show, Constitutionally Correct. Always click follow below the icon of the show, and you will get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile And that will send an email to your associated email letting you know when the show is broadcasting. And remember, if for any reason, although tomorrow is a holiday and a couple of browncoats here surviving Serenity Valley want to throw out our props to the fine men and women who serve, like Gunny here, Randy, in our military, because despite how our military is abused, no one can take anything away from the fine men and women who serve in our military. So remember, on this Veterans Day and tomorrow as we celebrate it, all those fine people who have laid their lives on the line for us. And I think that's very important, and thank you for your service, sir. So if you're off tomorrow and you want to listen to Randy live, do. And if you cannot, always check out the show and archive. And please also check out Bard's Logic Political Talk, broadcasting, I believe, at 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and at 8 p.m. on Sundays, right before Tex and Rex. Of course, Robert did not broadcast this evening, and he was forbidden from calling into the show because it is Robert's one-year wedding anniversary today. So keep his wife and him in your thoughts and prayers as they celebrate that wonderful occasion. And, Randy, thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, gentlemen. Have a great evening.
All right, we've got about 9 minutes of airtime left, and I'm going to throw it to Trog and Tex, but real quick, I just want to let everybody know that we appreciate you listening. We're doing this because we feel that we have to do something, and of course, action is always important, but the precursor to action is information. The precursor to action is knowledge. The precursor to action is encouragement, and I think the biggest precursor to action is knowing that it is not a futile effort, because you are not alone. There are millions of us who know that something's wrong with this system. We don't agree on every single issue, and if we get down in the weeds, we might find ourselves arguing, which is very healthy, and that is part of the democratic process. But at this stage of the game, we have an oligarchy that is giving us false duopoly choices and terrible candidates in order to rip apart that power, destroy that debate, so that those issues are never furthered, and the only thing that marches on is more debt, more centralization of power, and loss of liberty. So remember, we outnumber them. We have more power. Take the information you have here, share it with others, empower them, encourage them, get them involved, because the work doesn't stop simply because this farce of an election is over. We're entering the first week following this debacle that's probably been going on for more than a year. Now is the time to act. Now is the time to get active, because 2014 is literally around the corner, and we have to start moving the ball in the right direction now. So with that, I'm going to throw it back to my co-host, Tex, and just keep in mind that we're always going to deliver irreverent, relevant, radioactive conservatism with a bite, because we're a couple of browncoats with a microphone. Tex?
Yeah, I would, you know, what I think the message that a lot of people ought to take away is that, you know, people who are on the Republican side or feel that that's where they identify should not take this as a defeat. This actually is a victory for us, because if the RINOs had won, they would have used this to say that you were irrelevant. They lost, and they are using this as an excuse to say that you were also irrelevant. However, the data clearly points to the fact that they lost our vote, and that moving towards the left and becoming the RINO party is a failed strategy. They're trying to double down on it, and they think that they will save themselves, because this is the problem. By not participating in the system and having 11 million people not vote, what they're saying is we have shrunk the number of people who actually care down so small that we can make the people who actually believe in the concepts of the Constitution irrelevant, because they will choose to self-censor and not show up. You have to make sure that that doesn't happen. Your voice should always be heard. Whatever your voice is, you need to make sure that you're heard. And in the primary, you have an opportunity to actually vote for the candidate who most closely expresses what you believe. Quit trying to vote for who they told you is the winner, because that will make you a winner. The only way you win is if you vote for the candidate who expresses what you believe, because the party can never correct course, because it will never get the message if you don't vote for who most closely represents what you believe. And because everyone on our side, and, you know, perhaps on the Democrat side, but everyone on our side always falls in behind the last guy in line and who the leader says to support, you are encouraging and adding fuel to the fire of the rhino movement of our party. So it's time that you really sort of straighten your spine, start standing up for what you actually believe in, start communicating this, and stop falling in line. Because at this point, we've gotten to a place where we can go no further. And now the party itself and the party's survival is at stake. And it's at stake because we have been too compliant. You have been so compliant to the point where you're like, I can't go along with this anymore. And you know why? Because they don't listen. And all the other people who have been going along are saying, well, yeah, we believe in this stuff, and this is the Reagan-Gingrich Party and all this kind of, you know, stuff. And, but yet you keep getting rhino after rhino after rhino, and after a while you're like, this is a big lie. And so you want to withdraw from the ranks, and everyone in the ranks is like, no, we can't, because then Obama would win. But yet you have a guy who's going to do the same policy. At what point do you not take the blinders off? At what point do you not stand up for what you believe in and start voting for somebody who believes what you believe in? For those on the Democrat side who don't like Barack Obama and can see what a wretched, you know, horrible economic record he had, and you were ready to find someone else to vote for, and you looked over and we had this pile of crap rhino that basically was agreeing with your guy on pretty much everything, and you said, well, what the hell's the point? Either I just vote for my guy because, well, at least he's my guy, or I don't show up. You need to start doing the same thing on your side, because the main conflict in American politics today is between concentrated and centralized power and decentralized power. And you have candidates on your side who are for decentralized power. And I would much more rather have an election between your candidate, who is promoting decentralized power and returning it back to local governments, and our candidate, who is about decentralized power and turning it back to local governments. That would be an election worth having, instead of an election between a bunch of fascists and communists who are trying to say that the federal level is the perfect level to solve all problems, not only in the United States, but all across the globe.
Absolutely right, Tex. I agree with you very much, and I believe so does Chris. Chris, you want to give us your final thoughts as we close out the show?
Yeah, I just I'm going to change what I was thinking about. You know, just looking at some posts that I saw and looking at some comments that people are making on the thread on the show. And here's I think it's really important. You're not going to get 11 million people to all of a sudden jump up and go, I have a revelation and I'm going to go vote third party next time. This is a process. I mean, I think about the amount of time and energy and research I've gone through to get to where I'm at. I can't just change somebody's mind in one comment or one post or one radio show. And I think that's an important thing. We need to continually, day by day, building those relationships, opening the doors, educating people, leading them to whether it be the shows or the, you know, the radio or the Facebook groups where they can get involved, because it is a process to go from being, I'm a conservative, I've been a Republican all my life, oh, they're all a bunch of liars and they all violate the Constitution. Who is this Ron Paul guy? What? Constitution? What? There is such a huge gap between that revelation of understanding what it's going to take to save our country and where most people are at. And that's not something that's just going to occur, you know, in a light bulb, you know, turn it on and turn it off. So I think it's important to be patient, but be diligent and just set a goal, because if you can affect, you know, we've got 2 years to the midterms and 4 years to the next presidential election. If you can affect everybody who's serious about this, 4, 5, 6, 7 people personally a day, you know, you're going to change the world. You know, this is not something mass advertisement is going to convince people to do. There's a lot of anger right now. There's a lot of blaming right now. There's a lot of denial right now. And you can't just get up and go, you know, Ron Paul's been right all these years, because people are so programmed against him. It takes time to get people to see what he was right about. So that was just something I wanted to throw out there.
No, that's great, Chris. Appreciate that very much, and it's very true. I mean, anybody that tells you, you know, look, when you're trying to get people to change their minds about something, first you're really hitting on their ingrained paradigms, and that's a difficult thing to do. But most of us don't process new information, especially if it doesn't shift in our paradigm, until we hear it over and over and over again. So sometimes, you know, you've got the information, you've accepted it, you understand duopoly, but the person you're talking to might not. You've got to talk to them over and over and over again, changing hearts and minds slowly but consistently, so that we can turn this thing around very soon, because what's going on here, and the last minute of the show, but what's happening is that you have an imperial government. You know, I live near the imperial city where Barack Obama now sits on his throne, and he's going to throw around the worst policies and be prepared to destroy the country, and you're told to be afraid of him. Well, Romney would have done exactly the same thing, and you would have cheered it, and it wouldn't make a difference. What you have to realize is that this fight is not between the left and the right, liberals and conservatives, libertarians and Ron Paulers, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. This is a fight between we, the people of these United States of America, and the oligarchs that are sitting in Washington, D.C. and in Wall Street and trying to dictate the terms to us and make us debt slaves and reverse the course of liberty in this country and turn us into a hollow shell of who we used to be. You're the power. You have the power. Wake others up, because we got to retake the country and restore liberty. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.